all bad things.
Tragedies, disasters. Bad things.
Trigger warning for everything possible.
What?
Hello. I'm David.
I'm Rachel.
And this is All Bad Things.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome.
You can follow us on all of your favorite social medias. Meaning all of them. Like, we're on all of them somewhere.
Basically. Insta, yes. X, Facebook, TikTok, Twitch, Threads, Blue Sky, at All Bad Things Pod. Email us allbadthingspod@gmail.com. Join our Facebook discussion group, our subreddit, and our Discord.
Do all of those things.
There we go. Yes. Yeah, you reminded me last week of Blue Sky and Threads. I had completely forgotten.
I think I only reminded you of Threads. I think you reminded you of Blue Sky.
I always associate the two because they came around.
They came out around the same time, but
yeah,
too,
as Twitter declined.
I have not been on Twitter in a while at this point, probably like 6 months,
yeah,
something like that. So yeah, and I've heard it's just gotten worse. And I mean, it was already getting pretty bad.
I don't
when I was
really
on
go
it.
On there yeah. much. Like I tweet about the episode or whatever, and I always read Nicole's live tweet of the episode. So.
That's true. I do miss doing that. Mm-hmm. Somebody live thread, is that a thing?
I guess, right? Live thread, live sky,
it. Live sky,
live blew it.
Yeah, live blew it.
Live blew it. Doesn't quite sound
no,
right.
No, that doesn't quite jive as well as a Live Sky.
Live Sky.
Live Sky, maybe that's the app that we will create and get $6 billion for something that's totally worthless, just like Donald Trump's about to get.
What? What is he selling?
His Troth Central platform.
Troth Central?
Yeah. And guess what it's going to make its IPO like next week.
Oh, really?
And guess what the stock ticker is going to be, the letters.
Truth Social? Is it True Social or Truth Social?
Truth Social.
Let's see. TR, I mean...
No, the stock ticker is going to be DJT, Donald J. Trump.
Did he fucking pay for that?
Probably.
Fuck him. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, how the thing is worth $6 billion, nobody knows, but
although
whatever.
It'll be hilarious when it tanks. Yeah. Oh, Donald J. Trump is down in the market.
Troth Central. But yeah, that's...
We're not on that, just to be clear.
No, we're not.
We're not on all of the social medias, clearly.
No, because there are, like, the extreme right-wing ones.
Yeah,
like
we're not going to do that.
Telegram. Well, I don't even want to name them.
Yeah. No
because
need.
They exist. People know they exist anyway. Not too hard to find. But yeah. So, I've given you a... couple of hints about
you
this week, but
have.
I don't want you to guess
you don't want
it.
Me to guess it right
until
you're going to kind of semi-introduce it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to stop at a certain point.
So I know you want this to come. So this is there's some version of an anniversary coming up.
Yes.
And it's
and the anniversary
April.
Also happens to be our launch day. It's a Monday.
Okay.
So
I think I have a guess.
Okay.
I think I have a guess.
All right. So, on April 8th, 1994...
Oh! Okay, hold on. I don't.
Okay.
I was going to say Titanic. Titanic happened in April.
It did, yeah, you're
a
right.
A lot of action.
April
actually,
12th?
It was 1912.
Yeah, you're right.
A lot of things happened in April.
That's true.
A lot of tornadoes happened. That would be another guess, but keep going.
Yes. So, on April 8th, 1994... Electrician Gary Smith arrived at 171 Lake Washington Boulevard to install a new security system. It was just before 9 a.m., and even though there was no answer at the front door, Smith had a busy day in front of him, and knowing the installation would mostly involve work outside of the home,
I know what this is.
He grabbed his tools and began following the power lines as to get an idea of where to begin. The wires led to the roof above the garage, so he grabbed a ladder and climbed onto the roof to begin installing the system. As he climbed the garage roof, following the wires that led to a room above it, he looked into the window just to see if anyone was there to prevent startling somebody if there had been. While looking through the window, he noticed an overturned plant with what he thought was a mannequin lying next to it. When he noticed the blood on the floor, he immediately called the police. What he first suspected was a mannequin was a person who had been reported missing 6 days earlier. who also happened to be the biggest rock star on the planet at the time.
Yeah. This, my friends, is the 27 Club, Kurt Cobain.
Major trigger warning about suicide.
Yeah, yes, very much
so. I'm not really going to get into the details. I think most people know. I'm not going to get too grisly, but...
Yeah. There really wouldn't be much point to it. Yeah. And, we're doing a couple of, this is the 30th anniversary.
Yes, it is.
Oh, that's why. Okay. Yeah, a couple of musicians.
Yeah, music legends.
Yeah. And getting back to the 27 Club, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a minute, so... Wow. Yeah. When you said 1994 and then started telling, I definitely remember hearing the story of the electrician that he was found by like kind of a random person.
Yeah.
Not random. Like the guy had a reason to be there. Yeah. But,
showing up to do work. Mm-hmm. There's a room above the garage and that's where everything was kind of, that's where he decided that's where I need to install this.
Right.
Just like, oh. Ugh,
that.
And it's like one of the most famous people in the world who like the whole world is looking for.
Yes. I mean, like I feel really bad for that guy because that would be really traumatizing. Yeah. I mean, there are, horrible stories. People have found ones dead. It's horrible.
Guys who install things wind up seeing some fucking weird or crazy shit.
Yeah.
Like, when I worked for that security company, like, I heard some stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair. You know? I feel bad for tradespeople who end up in people's houses. I'm sure they're awkward.
I do not ever, like, because of that, I'm like, I do not ever want to work in somebody else's home.
I get that. So, that would be so bizarre and traumatizing. Yeah, I think, again, just lots of trigger warning for suicide. I am going to mention one thing. I think kind of sadly and famously, Eric Repair, who's a famous chef, he opened La Bernardin restaurant. I think that's New York. I don't think that's San Francisco. Anyway, he was really good friends with Anthony Bourdain. And he's the one who found Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah.
And that would be just so traumatizing. Yeah,
absolutely.
So, also, if you need help mentally, please, my God, get it. Get that help. And if you need help with resources, let us know. Because we can help point you in the right direction. But...
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. And also, probably don't listen to this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, most people, I don't know, maybe that's a person my age speaking, thinking most people know the details, but we have plenty of younger listeners, meaning people in their 20s. So they might not necessarily know.
It's a classic rock story.
It is. Well, they might not know. They probably, for the longest time, I didn't know how Jimi Hendrix or Jim Morrison died. Mm-hmm. I just knew that they were dead.
Right.
You know, and
famous rock stars who died. Yeah.
Speaking two other members of the 27
That's
Club.
That's right.
One that we've done. We've done Jim Morrison.
Yes, we have. Uh-huh. Haven't done Jimmy yet. That's a very famous one. But
yes. So, Kurt's life growing up. So, this is going to be mostly a history on Kurt and some of Nirvana and then the
Do
situation.
Do you have a playlist?
I don't. Okay. You know? No. Okay. I am going to put out some things, like some interviews and stuff like that when we release the episode. So.
Okay. So April 8th, 94 was the date? Okay.
2 weeks. 2 weeks from today.
Yeah, from this recording. Yes. But it should be today when it comes out.
Correct. Or next week. Who knows?
We can do it. It would be mean to put it on April Fool's Day.
It would. So. Yeah, you're right. It would be. So Kurt Donald Cobain was born
I'm sorry,
in. I know I didn't expect that either. I was like, his middle name is Donald, really?
Also, Kurt almost sounds like Curtis is a Kurt is short for Curtis, but.
Well, no, his name is
I understand.
His name is Kurt K U R T.
I know, but because his middle name is Donald, I feel like his first name needs to be longer. Like Donald Kurt almost sounds
Curtis Donald.
Kurt Donald or like
Kurt.
Kurtford.
Kurtland Donald.
Kurtford
Donald Cobain. Was born in Aberdeen, Washington on February 20th, 1967 at Gray's Harbor Hospital. So I guess that's just a thing, like Gray's something out
there. Gray's Anatomy.
In the Seattle area.
Oh, is Aberdeen a suburb of Seattle?
Yes. Well, not necessarily, but it's not too far from it. So he was born at Grays Harbor Hospital to parents Wendy and Donald Cobain.
Oh, that's why his middle name is Donald.
Yes. So Wendy, a waitress, and Donald, a mechanic, had just recently married a year and a half earlier on July 31st, 1965. I thought this part was interesting. The Cobain surname comes from Irish ancestors who first settled in Cornwall, Ontario.
Oh, there's always, that's across the river yes, from you, where you grew up.
After emigrating to North America in 1875 before moving on to the state of Washington.
Hmm.
Kurt also had a younger sister, Kimberly, who was born on April 24th, 1970, making her just shy of 24 years old when her older brother would pass away. Uh-huh.
So his, did both of his parents survive him as well?
Yes. Okay. So his family had a lush musical background with his Uncle Chuck playing in bands throughout Grays Harbor County, while Aunt Marie did the same, or Aunt Marie, however people like to say
How it. Do you... You say aunt, I say aunt, right? I say aunt, too.
Aunt. Aunt sounds more official, though.
It does, but it sounds like you're speaking with a British accent. Aunt. Aunt.
So a great Uncle Delbert... Had a career as an Irish tenor, making an appearance in the 1930 film King of Jazz. So Kurt was described by his parents as a happy and excitable child with a high degree of sensitivity as well.
ADHD?
Yeah.
On the spectrum something?
His artistic talents presented itself in the form of drawing at first, so much so that his initial goal in life was to become a professional artist.
That movie that we watched, that documentary, had a bunch of his artwork.
Montage
right?
of heck. Yes. I bring it up
okay.
later on.
Okay.
But just for one bad part, but anyway.
No. Yeah.
So, yes, that was his first thing, was he wanted to be a professional artist. He's 4 years old, by the way.
Wanting to be a professional yes. artist. Well, what's the first thing you can remember wanting to be?
A paleontologist. Really?
How old are you?
That was in kindergarten, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to be an author in the first grade. I
yeah,
be a writer.
I would grow up to know somebody who was going to school for paleontology. And
really?
All it made me think of was just, wow, you're just going to be poor for the rest of your life. And,
it is
and,
niche.
And, yeah.
It is very, very
and,
niche.
And you'll be fucking lucky to pay off those NC State loans.
Mm. Man.
So, kind of glad I didn't go that route.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's one of two. You can go one of two ways. One is...
Like, I hope you find something awesome.
You end up being, like, a rando worker somewhere yeah. with a paleontology degree. Or you actually do manage to make... Or academia, maybe.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, she was a hostess at this restaurant that I worked at. She was pretty cool. She was pretty quirky, but yeah, that's what she was going to school for.
Okay.
And I'm like, she was telling me that, yeah, I'm going to do a dig and this and that, and... Like, we're going to sleep in hammocks and, like...
Oh, just, okay. Well, screw that.
Like, out in the middle of, like, fucking, like, nowhere on...
No.
Like, you know...
No.
Yeah.
No.
Something you would never be able to do.
Literally.
Me neither, probably. I was just
no,
like, yeah,
I'm, I am proud that
like, no.
I'm able to do that.
I was like, I'm going to buy a house one day.
And sleep indoors.
Sleep inside
on a mattress.
Yes. That's what I'm going to do.
Yes. No, on a sleep number bed.
Yes. And have running water and a... toilet and shower and all the good things.
Yes.
So the music bug was also not far behind, as he began playing piano and writing his own songs at the age of four. Now, writing your own songs at the age of four, it was probably like, but still, hey, that's something.
Yeah, that's fine. Allegedly, Mozart was writing like some of his pieces at like.
So you're going to love his influences growing up. So his influences were Electric Light Orchestra or ELO.
Don't Let Me Down.
Yes. Terry Jacks.
Terry Jacks. How did I know that name?
Yeah, I forgot to put the song in. He had a famous song. The Monkey. The Monkees.
The Monkees, really?
And of course, the Beatles.
Oh, of course.
Who would remain his favorite band along with Black Sabbath. So just a mm-hmm. quick side note. Like, his goal for Nirvana, whether he achieved it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his goal for a band was he wanted something that was like a mashup of the Beatles and Black Sabbath. That was like his musical... That's where he was trying to go.
You know, like, in a way, I think they kind of achieved that. I don't know that I would say that they were that far off. Because, well, maybe we can talk about when we get to the Nirvana years. We're
sure.
still at four.
Yes, he is still four at this yes. point. So when Kurt was nine,
mm-hmm.
His parents divorced. So he later stated that the divorce had a profound effect on his life, with his mother noting that his personality changed dramatically at this time.
Yikes.
So he went from being cheerful and happy to defiant and withdrawn.
Also, also, like, he's getting a little older. Yeah.
Quite the opposite of Henry Kissinger, who claimed growing up had no effect on his later years, which which explains quite a bit.
Growing up Jewish in an anti-Semitic...
Barely getting out of World War II. Like, barely getting out of a concentration camp by, like, 3 months.
Like, that didn't really affect me. Nah. What, are you a sociopath? Oh, wait, you are.
Huh? What? Don't even know the term. Never heard of it.
Oh, my goodness. But, I mean, like, oh, that's such a... Like, I think that's one of the many reasons we need to reconsider what relationships look like. In that, you know... Divorce sometimes really does fuck kids up, right?
Sure.
But that sometimes parents staying together.
I'm also a child of divorce.
Sure, but sometimes parents staying together.
But I was going to say, look how I turned out. No.
Sometimes that parents staying together also fucks kids up.
Oh, you know? Sure. I mean, so, parents just fuck kids up.
They do. You know what? And that
there's almost no escaping it.
There is no escaping it. And that is 100% God's honest truth. If you are someone considering having a child, here's the thing. You just have to accept.
Yeah, you're going to leave some scars. Up your kid. Yeah.
And it's not because you're a bad person.
No, it's just
because
it happens.
It's, yeah. And you never, you're not going to know what's going to fuck your kid up. Because sometimes it's the most innocuous shit.
That's why one day you buy him a bike. To make up for, like, the...
pay for their therapy.
Yeah, to make up for the make up for the mental damage that'll come later in life. Anyway, what?
But so, nine is...
That's. I mean, I was 12.
Yeah, I was going to say nine's a little early. It's
nine is very young, though.
But I guess it could, you know, it could fuck you up, I guess. Oh, at any age, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I don't... I mean, and like you said, like, staying together, like, looking back at it, I'm like, I don't think that would have helped either. I'm like,
in your family, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't, I think it rarely would help.
Yeah.
It's not that it's, like, the logistics of divorce are very difficult, yeah, let alone the emotions of it.
Again, you know? Like, I work with somebody presently who is still technically married, because she can't get afford, they can't afford to get divorced.
Jeez. Okay, well, at this point... In this economy, can you imagine how many people are, like, either in relationships but really broken up, or, like, in marriages but not really together, but are living together just for the cost of rent or a mortgage alone?
I mean, yeah.
I cannot even imagine the number of how many people are basically you just know what? Stuck.
It's not, like, a couple of people.
No, it's I'm a couple sure million. It's, I'm sure it's a huge and sad number.
All right, so his parents get divorced when he's nine, and although his father promised not to remarry, he did so in 1978 to Jenny Westaby.
Well, dude, that's why you don't promise.
Yeah.
Come on.
So Kurt would move in with the new family as Westaby already had two children, and in 1979 gave birth to a child.
So he had a half-sibling as well?
Yep. So while getting along with his new family at first, he soon became resentful. Cobain's mother, Wendy, on the other hand, would go on to marry an abusive partner.
Ooh.
Cobain witnessed the best domestic abuse of his mother, with one instance leading her to be hospitalized. So as his adolescence turned to his teenage years, he became untrusting of adults and insolent towards them.
Well, that's...
Understandably so.
That's... oh my god. Okay, so this kid's starting to get exposed to, like, actual trauma beyond any emotional... or mental trauma from a divorce. Witnessing a parent being abused is horrible.
Yeah.
It is absolutely horrible. That I can't even... Of course, being the abused person, also horrible and traumatic.
Yeah.
But that, yeah, that's a way to fuck a kid up.
Yeah. So on June 28th, 1979, Cobain's mother granted full custody to his father instead.
But she was trying to protect him. Like, hey, get him out of this house, you know,
so
that he's not going to get hurt.
His teenage rebellion proved to be too much for his father and their new family, and he placed him in the care of family friends instead.
Oh my god, that's so shitty.
While living with his friend Jesse, he became a devout Christian, as his family were born-again Christians.
Wait, Kurt Cobain did?
Yes, and he regularly attended church. Which wouldn't last deep into his teenage years, not surprisingly. So
he hadn't discovered drugs yet, basically.
Well, he's about to.
Okay, yeah. So first Jesus, then we'll move on to the drugs.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Cobain often drew during classes in high school, and through art and electronics classes, he met Roger Buzz Osborne.
Sorry, just electronics classes.
Yeah, that's what it says.
In the early 80s, right? They called it electronics.
Electronics classes.
Let's take electronics.
Which meant it had like one of those like toy kids' pianos. You know what I mean? It's the electronics class. Just had Fisher Price stuff in there.
We have a calculator, kids.
Look at this.
No, they.
What does this sign mean?
By the early 80s, there were super early PCs, right? Mm-hmm. The Apple II came out in 1980, I think. So there were. I only know that because I recently listened to that Behind the Bastards about Steve Jobs. Yeah.
So he met Roger Buzz Osborne, who just started his own punk band called The Melvins. So it was his first introduction to punk rock and hardcore music, and he was immediately hooked. He found an escape in the thriving punk scene happening in Seattle and would regularly attend shows with his friend Buzz, while also being a regular at Buzz's band, The Melvins shows. Okay. So The Melvins are really like one of the biggest influences musically on,
okay. Is
on
this
Kurt
like,
Cobain.
Is this like the early grunge days? Or is this like
the You know what? The Melvins are one of those bands that gets a lot of credit for they're kind of the
Cuspers.
Grunge band. They didn't become super famous like some of the bands that came after them, but yeah, they were a part of that scene for sure.
It's funny, in like almost every scene, like almost every genre of music that emerges and then usually, you know, gives way to another, the next thing, like the trends, there always seems to be that, like, that one band that influenced everybody, but nobody else knows about them. You know?
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
they didn't become popular.
I mean, they're kind of known now because they're known for influencing Nirvana, but they never had.
But I mean, as like their own band,
right? Yeah, absolutely.
They're known for influencing other bands,
correct?
Kind of.
Yeah.
You know?
So during this time, he moved back in with his mother until he was a senior in high school. And 2 weeks prior to graduation, he dropped out of high school, Aberdeen High School, realizing that he did not have enough credits to graduate anyway.
Oh, so he wouldn't have graduated.
No. And his mother gave him an ultimatum, ugh, find employment or leave. After 1 week, Cobain found his clothes and other belongings packed away in boxes, and feeling
God.
Banished, Cobain stayed with friends, occasionally sneaking back into his mother's basement.
Oh my God, I actually feel really bad for this kid.
Yeah.
Like, both of his parents just basically abandoned him in the end. That's horrible.
So in late
19... Don't do that to your kids.
Yeah, right?
You'll fuck them up other ways, but don't abandon them.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I mean, you can... Yeah, you don't have to completely fuck them up.
Don't deliberately fuck them up,
yeah,
for God's sake.
I mean, just a little bit. A little bit you're going to do naturally.
You'll do it
that's
accidentally.
All yes,
like,
that's all we're saying.
Like, ton of it accidentally.
Yeah,
just
don't do it on purpose.
No.
Yeah. So in late 1986, Cobain moved into his own apartment while he was working at a resort.
What was he doing?
He was just basically janitorial stuff.
Okay.
And he worked at his high school for a little bit as a the high school he was going to. Like, but
that,
can you imagine?
That might be a little weird if he knew the kids just under him in school. Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of like embarrassing feeling, I'm sure.
Although his parents were kind of working class, so it sounds like he was sort of used to like a working class.
Well, I mean, that's what most... pretty much all, not most, musicians are if you're trying to do your own thing, because
you need something kind of low-key and flexible.
And you're not going to make money forever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, for the longest time, only those groups that get put together by, like, super producers.
Right.
Like, oh, we need four blonde girls, those four.
Mm-hmm.
We need five 20-year-old guys, those, you know.
Well, what, oh my goodness, I forget where this was, what I was watching or what I was reading, but there was basically, like, somebody famous, and I completely forget what sector they were in, whether they were an entertainer of some sort, or in tech, or something, who basically said, don't chase your dream to do what I did, because you're not going to make it. And then people were upset at it, but like, but you made it, so you like prove that it can happen. But they were like, this just doesn't happen, and too many people are gonna end up chasing a dream that's not gonna pan out. You know, maybe it was an influencer, I forget, but yeah, it's anyway. That was a side tangent. We can proceed.
Proceed.
Kurt Donald Cobain.
Yes. So he frequently traveled to Olympia, Washington during this time, going to punk shows and getting more involved in the scene and making friends with some of the bands and the performers. He began dating Toby Vail of the band Bikini Kill. His relationship with her would go on to inspire some of Nirvana's songs, and it is rumored the title of the song, Smells Like Teen Spirit, was a joke she made about him saying he smelled like the popular teen deodorant.
I remember Teen Spirit.
But the commercials before that song came out were, it was like, Smells Like Teen Spirit, and it was like a...
Oh, that's the tagline.
Yes.
I didn't know that. So they took like their little tagline to...
Which kind of like, at first, like, it was like, why would you call the song that?
But
then,
right.
But then after a while, it was like, well, the song is really awesome, so it doesn't matter.
People remember the song more than the tagline, that's for sure.
Pretty much.
But I do think it is a, I mean, because are we going to discuss their music later?
We're about to.
Right? Okay, because I feel like, please correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not as versed in grunge or Nirvana, but it never says Smells Like Teen Spirit in Smells Like Teen Spirit, the song.
Correct. It's just the title of the song.
It does say Nevermind.
It does.
But,
yes.
The album title, but it, to me, it's like the ultimate Gen X anthem of like completely disaffected youth.
I mean,
right?
It became that.
So
it, you know, it was instantly credited as doing that, and that turned out to be correct.
Right,
like it really has like stood the test of time.
So I feel like the tagline's like ironic, right? It's meant to
it
be
is.
Ironic,
yes.
And
it's a joke.
And so it works. It works really well.
Yeah. So now we're gonna get into the formation of Nirvana.
Okay. Was Buzz involved at all?
Well, kind of. He was never in the band, but you know, they toured together and things like that. Oh. So,
Melvin and Nirvana?
The Melvins.
Oh.
The Melvins.
Just said Melvin.
Just Melvin. Melvin and Nirvana.
Melvin the Martian. No, it's
Nirvana
Martin
and Melvin.
Nirvana and Melvin. Nirvana and the Melvins.
You know what? That works.
It kind of does.
Excuse me. So the formation of Nirvana. So during high school, Cobain rarely found anyone with whom he could play music. While hanging out at a Melvin's practice space, he met future bass player for Nirvana, Chris Novoselic.
Novoselic, how's that spelled?
Novoselic. So Novoselic.
Oh, Selich. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it's
a very Eastern European name.
Yes.
Of the Baltic states, I believe, is where his ancestry is from. So Novoselic's mother owned a hair salon, and the pair occasionally practiced in the upstairs room of the same salon.
His mother's a saint.
Yeah, right? A few years later, Cobain tried to convince Novoselic to form a band with him by lending him a copy of a home demo recorded by his first band, Fecal Matter.
this is Kurt's.
This
first
is Cobain's,
band?
Okay. Yeah. First, like, you know, band that he takes around and like they actually tour and stuff with. But yes, Fecal Matter. don't know if he can still get
Cute
any
Kurt.
Of the. Yeah. So after months of hounding him to join, Novoselic obliged, and they formed the new band that they decided to call Nirvana because they wanted to have the name of the band as something beautiful instead of something kind of.
Disgusting, like Fecal Matter.
Yes, that was kind of their they were like, our music is going to be shitty, but at least we'll have like, oh,
a
Nirvana.
Beautiful name, yeah.
Yeah, like a pretty
a pleasant
name.
Pleasant association.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So religion became a significant songwriting influence to Cobain during this time, as he often used Christian imagery in his work and developed an interest in Buddhist philosophy.
Was he still like
born again
at this point?
No, he was never born again. He just kind of... got into a phase when he was 13 where he went to church.
Oh, okay.
And then when he wasn't living with his friend's family anymore,
right,
he was like,
he wasn't,
yeah.
But he, it sounds
but
like
he stayed, like he...
Spiritual, not religious. It was,
correct.
Sounds like,
yeah.
Would, yeah, as they say, would maybe...
Which, I mean, there is a difference.
Yes, yeah. There is, yeah. And a lot of people...
A lot of people
have
are
some
spiritual.
Version
I,
of...
I consider myself to be spiritual. I believe in, like, certain weird things.
I consider myself not spiritual and not not religious.
No,
but
I'm definitely not religious.
I would prefer the spiritual to the religious, frankly, myself. So
Cobain became frustrated after early touring with his new band and their inability to draw sizable crowds, and the difficulty of supporting themselves financially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, God, yeah. Road life is brutal.
It's, there's,
especially if you're grinding it out.
And you can only do it, mm-hmm. really, if you're in your late teens, early right. 20s. That's real. I mean, if you don't get picked up by the time like you're in your late 20s, it's like,
Well, because like, usually you've run out of money.
Yeah.
And you want to actually like have a life yeah. at some point. Yeah. You age out of it, like yeah. maturity wise. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I can't, like I gotta go back to school and become a lawyer.
Well, right. I mean, yeah, exactly. Happens. Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, the sort of Peter Pan type people who are like in their 30s, but living like they're like in their late teens and early 20s. It gets really sad. You know, it's like, have you grown as a person during this time period? Because you're not acting like you have. Like, is there some, what's wrong? Like, what happened along the way? Because you should...
Many things.
I mean, it is one thing, and I'm not, like, trying to, like, make fun of people who have genuine obstacles. You know, people live with their parents now, generally, sometimes really, or move back in with their parents. 18
to 24-year-olds, isn't it, like, 50% or something ridiculous?
That's completely understandable.
Yeah.
People in their, well into their 20s and even their 30s and beyond, potentially, also live with their parents, sometimes for financial reasons or care reasons or whatever. But... what I'm talking about is like the if you see like a 40-year-old person saying like, oh no, my band's really gonna hit it big one day, like hanging out in his mom's garage smoking weed, that's when it's like
that's when it's too late.
Like if a 19-year-old's doing that, whatever, that's age appropriate.
Correct.
It's not as age appropriate.
21 years later. Yeah. Any day, and then you know, he's also talking about, like if Jimmy...
Just a big break.
If Jimmy had hit that one note, we would have hit... like, because they played a showcase at some point.
Right.
And he's like, if Jimmy had just hit that one note, but, like, he missed it, and it screwed up my solo, and then there went the whole thing, man. Anyway. Yeah, there's no... I mean, I worked at an establishment where... saw like touring bands coming through all the time. Now, mm-hmm. they weren't touring nationally most of the time,
but there's a regional circuit.
Yes,
yeah.
They were going up and down the East Coast. Yeah. You could just tell, man, that they were just fucking like beat.
Well, because that is a grind. You can make a living, yeah. but it's a grind.
And I'm talking about people in like their, you know, early to mid 20s.
Yes,
and you could just see like the, you know, like the rings the around battle their scars, eyes. Yeah.
Well, I don't think like if you're not a performer, it's hard to describe what yeah. performing does to you.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, at least for me, I really like performing. It also drains the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Like, it is exhausting.
Yeah, your band plays for 3 hours.
Sometimes yeah, we do.
That's
even
nuts.
When we play 2 hours or whatever, first of all, a lot of times we play outside in the heat. It's really exhausting. But even just the energy, the mask, you know, because you're performing, you're not behaving 100% as yourself because you're entertaining people. There's mm-hmm. a job to be done. That's really... I have no idea how Bruce fucking Springsteen managed to play mm-hmm. 3-hour shows for decades and decades, even like into his 60s.
But the cool thing when we went to see him, like... Mm-hmm. Like, they'll pick, like, what? Like, the first half of their set, and then they'll pull signs out of the crowd and be like, oh, we're playing this.
Oh, they took their requests. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that was cool.
And we saw Rage Against the Machine's guitar player.
That's right, Tom Morello.
Yes, with him when we saw him.
That's right. And he did do his...
His patented weird guitar
yeah,
shit.
Uh-huh. that's what the trademark says. Weird guitar shit. Trademark.
Yeah, patented. So, due to a seemingly never-ending succession of drummers... The duo eventually settled on drummer Chad Channing, who they would record their first album with.
I'm sorry.
Chad Channing.
That's a bad name. That's a bad name. Like, was Chris Novoselic. Chris Novoselic, mm-hmm. That's fine. Kurt Cobain, that's a catchy name.
Yeah.
And then Chad Channing. Hi, I'm Chad Channing. Would you like to go to the lake with me and Buffy? Chad and
certainly.
Buffy.
Certainly.
We wear neck sweaters. Chad Channing. Does are that just sound like a weird preppy name?
But are there British people named Chad?
I'm not doing a British accent.
Oh.
I'm doing a posh American accent.
Yeah, like a, what, like a Kennebunkport.
Kennebunkport
accent.
Bane.
Yeah.
No, it's just, I think, oh, what? I don't even know who I'm impersonating. It's just like this, oh yes, well we have a bit, it's almost like a plummy American accent. I don't know where I'm getting this
character
from.
Oh, Frasier. There you go. Mm-hmm. Frasier-esque.
Frasier, it's almost transatlantic. Yes. You know, yeah. Anyway. Chad, tell me more about Chad Channing.
So they would record their first album with him.
With Chad. Nirvana featuring Chad Channing.
They had just recently signed a record deal with the local label Sub Pop Records.
This poor guy. I feel bad. He's probably a perfectly fine guy. I'm just mocking his name, which he had nothing to do with. So sorry, Chad.
So Sub Pop Records had gained a reputation of being able to successfully market bands coming out of the Northwest United States region. So they were
like
kind
a
of...
regional label.
And, I mean, they had Nirvana. They had Soundgarden. They had Mudhoney. Wow. They had, I mean...
Some of the big
they were checks. They were like... bands that would go on to be bigger things, they were like the springboard for them.
Okay.
Like they would do, you know, Sunny Day Real Estate started with Sub Pop.
That's quite a talented label to find
Because
if
still
a
around
of,
too, they are still around.
Oh, okay. Because if a whole bunch of like legendary acts come out of your label, that says something. You're able to find the talent.
So with the producer Jack Endino, who was also a guitarist for the band Skinyard. At the helm, the trio got to work, and Andino was a popular engineer and producer in the Seattle area rock scene, having recently produced albums for other local artists such as Mudhoney and Soundgarden. Okay. So he also produced them as well. So on June 15th, 1989, Nirvana would release their debut album, Bleach.
So he was 22, Kurt was 22 at the time.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Bleach.
The album would not chart upon its initial release, but would receive mostly positive reviews, with one outlet stating that the album feels rushed, raw, brutal, and anger-ridden.
That's grunge!
Yes!
Jesus! They just literally described grunge. But at this point, grunge isn't
It's not a thing yet. It's not a term yet.
Yeah.
And it hasn't caught on yet. We're still in 1989.
So, it's only going to be 5 more years for Kurt. This happened fast.
Oh yeah.
For him, yeah.
I mean, think of how young you are when you're 27.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the end of your life.
Jesus, yeah.
And yeah, that's not a lot of life. I mean, it really isn't.
No, it's not. Although I think he lived a lot of life in his life. Just not the healthiest, especially for his mental health. But yeah.
So, although Bleach was not promoted as much as the other Sub Pop releases, it ultimately sold 40,000 copies.
So, for a small...
little indie
debut,
label, regional
that's
label.
Pretty good, yeah.
It has since gone on to sell 1.9 million copies.
Yes. Yeah.
Obviously because of their success afterward.
Right.
You have to have the firsts.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I remember getting it, like, after Nirvana broke big, and like, oh, they have this other album.
Right, uh-huh.
Because that was not uncommon back then. It was like, mm-hmm. you know, you found... Green Day, you found out the same thing. Oh, they had two other like independent albums.
Right.
Like all these bands had like one album before.
It's like when you see a movie or a TV show and you're like, oh, I really like that actor, and then you look and see what else they've done and go watch some of their early stuff.
Yeah, he was in Critters too.
Speed 2, Cruise Control.
Starring Leonardo.
Waiter number 3.
Starring Leonardo DiCaprio when he was like 10.
Was he?
Yes.
Oh, that's funny. I thought you were joking.
No, it's like a B horror movie. It's hilarious though. It's really good.
Okay. But was Nevermind their biggest album or In Utero?
Well, we're going to get into
okay.
that. It's
okay.
It's Nevermind.
Okay. That's what I figured.
So after
Oh well, whatever, Nevermind.
Exactly. So, after playing a few local shows to promote the release, Nirvana soon embarked on their first ever European tour with fellow Seattle band, Tad. T-A-D. Tad.
It was Chad Channing going yachting with Tad.
Tad Channing.
Tad Thompson. Tad Taddington. And Chad Channing. I don't know why. I'm tired, is why that's funny to me.
You are punchy.
I am a little punchy.
So Nirvana made an impression in the UK, and the tour was considered a success, leading to the band being courted by several major label distributors when they arrived back home.
It's so interesting when some bands don't make it domestically initially. Like, it takes an international destination to kind of start stirring up some buzz.
Well, I mean, you create a buzz in the UK, and it's like, I mean, the UK is the other big rock scene
other
than North America.
Has been since pre-Beatles.
So it's like, if you raise eyebrows over there, it's like, huh, oh, and they're an American band.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, did we miss something?
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
In this case, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So on April 30th, 1991, Nirvana signed with Geffen Records.
Oh, that's a big label.
Mostly due to the positive experience their friends in the band Sonic Youth had with the label.
Oh.
So this is at a time all these area bands had already signed major label deals. None of them are broke big yet. But they're all on major labels. Alice in Chains is on a major label. Soundgarden is. Sonic Youth is.
So the industry is poising.
Yes.
At the like, break of grunge.
Some of these bands are ready to break. And
right.
Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of who it's going to be.
So clearly there's like some industry insiding going on here where it's like, hey, we think we found
the next sound. There's like, is this the new sound you were looking for?
Uh-huh.
Like, there was something like, you know, lurking, like, in the... Because we're talking about 1989.
Mm-hmm.
It's still fucking hair metal.
Right.
And, you know, even, like, Whitney Houston, Jackson, like, people with big hair, big personalities.
Mm-hmm.
But there's all these alternative bands that are just kind of... got their first deal, they're getting their legs under them a little bit.
And some people in the industry clearly are like, so here's what we think is coming up next, and that's what breaks. Just so interesting with pop music, and I'm putting rock in that, you know.
Cause, oh, of course, because it is pop music.
Yeah, it is. It is just how trend-driven it really is.
Oh, for sure.
You know.
Well, it has to be. I mean, that's the whole point of it.
Yes.
Really.
Yeah, pop. What's popular.
Trends are popular. To either create and or establish a trend. That's what they're all trying to do. That's why we're all trying to talk about the genius of rock stars and pop stars. And
right.
But really, that's the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to move on to the album Nevermind.
Oh, why are we Neverminding?
We are Neverminding. Yes.
So we're not going to cover it? Because Nevermind.
Because Nevermind. Oh, well, whatever. So coming off the relative success of their debut album, Bleach, Nirvana was eager to record with their new label. Unfortunately for drummer...
Chad Channing.
That eagerness did not extend to him... And the band hired their sixth drummer, Dave Grohl, who joined the band around the same time as they signed with Geffen Records.
So,
So what's your...
I think Dave Grohl is a much better grunge drummer's name. Because if you think of the words grunge and hole and portmanteau, it's Grohl. I know it's not spelled that way,
it has the same sound, though.
It has the Grohl. Connotation of both grunge and hole, which are you going to mention
later? I am, okay. Yes.
Then Grohl. But Dave Grohl doesn't... that's not right. It's Dave Grohl, which is grunge,
and
right?
Chad Channing.
And Dave Grohl.
You can't say... You have to whisper Chad Channing. You can't say it, like, outright.
Chad Channing!
No,
doesn't work. No.
Yeah, so Dave Grohl of Grohl and Hole.
I said Grunge and Hole, not Grunge Grohl and Hole. Grohl and Hole sounds like the worst law firm ever.
Quite possibly. It probably exists, too. So, yes. So Dave Grohl has just joined the band.
He's super young, too, right?
Yes, he is. He said he turned 21 like a week before, like they started recording.
Okay.
So, Nevermind was recorded in May and June of 1991 at Sound City Studios in Van Nuys, California, and was produced by Butch Vig. So, he did a documentary on this called Sound City that we watched a while ago. It came out in, like, 2016.
He did Little Jagged Pill, did he?
No, I don't think so. No,
but who am I thinking of? Who is the famous person who did Alanis Morissette's?
Glenn something? I can't remember.
Anyway, Butch Vig is a huge and famous...
Yes, very much so. Producer. Well, he had already done some, like, well-received, like, independent albums. This is the album that made him huge as well. Mm-hmm. You know? And he would later go on to form the band Garbage, so...
Yeah, I didn't hear it was very good. I heard it was garbage. What band are you in? Oh, it's garbage. It's garbage. Oh, well, don't be so down on yourself.
Pick your head up. So
I'll be here all week, folks.
So the album was released on September 24th, 1991.
So it's a 23-year-old album this year.
33.
Oh, Jesus, 33. Yeah.
Which is considered one of the most famous release dates of all time.
September
24th, 1991. So the other albums released on this day were Red Hot Chili Peppers, Blood Sugar Sex Magik.
Oh, wow. That's a huge album.
Yes, was their commercial breakout. Soundgarden, Super Unknown, which was their commercial breakout.
Okay.
The Pixies, Trompe Le Monde, and the Pixies are one of those, they're not a grunge band, but they're one of those late 80s, early 90s alternative bands that made an impression. And A Tribe Called Quest's The Low End Theory. And A Tribe Called Quest was a huge, influential, early 90s hip-hop band.
I certainly have heard of them. Yes. I just don't know any of their stuff.
Yeah, I never really listened to them. I just know that they're highly influential. They get a bit of a different sound.
The Chili Peppers album, which of their many songs that sound the same were on that album?
Their breakout hit on that song was Under the Bridge. On that album.
Mm-hmm. Is that the With the Birds I Share?
No, that's different.
Which one is it?
Under the Bridge is it's a weird chorus that I'm not going to sing. I'm not going to butcher it. But yeah, it's got that. That's on Blood Sugar Sex Magik.
Okay. What about Don't Stop?
Suck My Kiss. No, Don't Stop is a different one. Suck My Kiss is on that album.
I don't like that name.
And their first big hit, now I can't think of the title of it, Give It Away Now.
Give It Away Now.
Yeah. That's another band. They had like four or five albums before this. And, I mean, on like a major label, they just didn't do anything. And then this album comes out and they've remained famous ever since.
So I contend that, now, Chili Peppers are better than U2.
Yeah.
Because U2 had one song. Chili Peppers have two. They have double the numbers of U2 because they had the Give It Away, Don't Stop songs. And then they had the With the Birds I Share This and the Dream of California.
See, that's the album that song is on.
Oh, okay.
Which is
the other song. Yeah. All those songs are another song. Uh-huh. So basically they're like, we're funky, but we have a soft side too. But they also wore socks on their penises in public, so they're douchebags too, but whatever. They were all douchebags back then. It was the 90s.
So, back to Nirvana. So, the album Nevermind would also receive mostly positive reviews upon its release, just as the video for the single Smells Like Teen Spirit made its debut on the popular MTV show Headbangers Ball.
I knew that was going to come up.
On October 25th of that same year. So this is October 25th, 1991. This is like exactly like a month after their album comes out.
Do you think that you maybe watched that episode? I know, I watched that premiere.
Yes, yeah. I know I watched it. I remember it.
You remember it?
Vividly. Wow. Because, and I'm going to put it on, like when we come out with this episode, I'm going to put it on the discussion group. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kurt's wearing a dress.
Okay.
And like you see the video and it's like, it looked like three homeless guys in a band.
Well, grunge.
But at that time, on Headbangers Ball, everything was fancy guitars, big hair.
Slick.
Yes, very, very bright. And then, and I think that's what made people like pay attention to it at first, because it was such a contrast to what was on Headbangers Ball.
Sure.
That it stood out just because of that.
Right.
And then you heard the song, you're like, wow, that song is pretty good too. Mm-hmm. Like, that's way heavier than the fucking shit that's out now, like Warrant and stuff like Poison, stuff like that.
Yeah,
not that those aren't bad bands, but I mean,
grunge really was sort of
it was back to basics. That was the
next move in hard rock.
Yes,
you know?
Very much so.
But yeah, you're right. It was less produced, less
grunge is an influence of many things, but the two main ingredients are like punk, and metal.
Yeah,
it's really like a blend of those two things.
But it's softer than both of them.
Yep, exactly.
So yeah,
that's why it's a blend.
it's a
blend.
Soft, like a Malbec that Chad Channing.
Yeah,
enjoys.
Chad Channing's Malbec.
I don't think a Malbec is a blend. I don't know what a Cab Sav.
Yeah,
it's like Chad Channing's Cab Sav. I'm not a wine drinker, clearly.
So With the album coming out paired with the video in just over 2 months, the sudden popularity of the song Smells Like Teen Spirit, the album was certified gold as it had sold 500,000 copies, and a serious buzz about the band and the single Smells Like Teen Spirit began to take hold in popular culture.
Now, it is a banger song. Like, it is.
It still sounds great today. I had to put it on my playlist and be like, I want to hear what this song sounds like on a modern stereo system. Right. It sounds great. Still sounds fucking great.
And it's also, I think it's a good song. You know, like, even if we're just talking like songwriting, I think it's a good song. It is very of its time,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of good songs are, you know.
Of course. And they create the time.
Sorry, the Guinness is giving me hiccups.
It's okay. But,
and a Guinness, still recommend.
Very the Guinness.
Good. Yes. But no, it's a great song. It still holds up, I think.
Whole album does. I mean, all of their stuff does, really. I mean, Bleach is a bit of an acquired, like, there's some songs on there you're like, nah, like, not quite my tempo.
Mm-hmm.
And then you throw, like, a chair at them. Like, but there are a couple songs on there, like, the guitar parts are like, wow, that sounds mm-hmm. really cool. I haven't heard, like, the timing structure on some of their stuff is, they weren't good enough yet to quite pull it off, but it's mm-hmm. it's like, it's almost there.
Another connection between Jimmy and Kurt, they were both left-handed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think upside-down guitarists?
No, Kurt played left-handed guitar.
Okay.
Jimmy Hendrix
was upside-down. Yep. But yeah, okay. Okay.
So on January 11th, 1992, that buzz that the band had created turned into a full-blown frenzy as Nevermind hit number one on the Billboard album charts, famously knocking Michael Jackson's album Dangerous off the top spot. That would turn out to be a quintessential name for an album from Michael.
Oh my God, he was literally
dangerous.
So Michael Jackson did albums called Dangerous and Bad.
Yeah.
Oh, Michael.
Well, in succession, it was Bad and then Dangerous.
Well.
So, but that made sense too. It's like, I'm bad.
He said, I'm bad. I'm really, really bad.
And now I'm dangerous.
Yes. So he was warning us the whole time. I'm bad, bad, really, really bad. Who's bad?
I'm dangerous.
Yeah.
So the album reached the number one spot again 4 weeks later. So it was number one two different times, which is a feat that not many albums do.
So it fell back slightly and then came back. And
came right back. Wow. Yeah, wow. Got knocked down to like two and three.
Right,
and
then it was still charting.
Yes. Huh? Yeah. Oh, big time. So it has gone on to be one of the biggest selling albums of all time, selling 30 million plus copies worldwide. Along with being just one of 48 albums certified diamond in the United States and one of 18 albums certified diamond in Canada. So a diamond certification in the United States is 10 million units sold.
Jeez.
In Canada, it's 1 million.
Yes. They have about a tenth of the population, so that makes sense.
They do. So yeah, like one out of every like 30 Canadians has Nevermind. Which that's a lot.
That is many Canadians.
if you're at a strip club in Cornwall, which I've been many times, and there's 200 people in there, yeah, you do the math.
Let us know if you are a Canadian who bought Nevermind.
Who has Nevermind. So now we're on to the fame portion of Kurt's life, which probably...
Well, we're already in 1992. This isn't ending well over the next 2 years, or going to go well.
That's true. When this album broke,
mm-hmm.
we had two years left.
Yeah.
And it went, oh man.
And a lot of shit happened.
Think how
in that
quickly
2 years.
Fucking 2 years goes by.
Yeah. No kidding.
So the sudden fame due to the success of Nevermind began to quickly take its toll on Cobain.
Yeah.
Not only was the band itself a mainstream success, but they helped usher in other bands from the same scene and popularized the hard rock subgenre dubbed grunge.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, alternative rock became a dominant genre on radio and music television in the United States during the first half of the 1990s. Nirvana was considered the flagship band of Generation X, and Cobain found himself reluctantly anointed by the media as the Generation X spokesman.
Yeah, that's never... That's got to be probably, I would be really uncomfortable with that, right? Like if he's
already uncomfortable.
Yeah,
like this is somebody that for somebody that doesn't really want attention.
He wants creative expression.
Right, but he picked the wrong thing to do.
Well, no, not necessarily. Because it could have just been sort of like true. Popular enough.
And locally. On top of the fact that, like, kind of none of these bands had the intention of, like, becoming famous. Like, it was right. It was not even a...
A lot like the punk scene. It was about artistic expression, yeah. Not about let's get rich and famous.
I mean, yeah, they're signed... By this time, they've all signed major label deals, but mm-hmm. none of them broke. There are plenty of bands that sign major label deals and do nothing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, so...
It's more just like, they'll give us the money, or they'll front the money to do the project.
To make the album, yeah. And mm-hmm. like, we'll be able to, like buy a house.
Maybe, right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and, like, maybe some
moderate
food.
Success, yeah. Basically.
Well, if you can... Like, in this, I've watched many, many music documentaries, but in one of them, I remember saying, like, you know, when we got with our management team, he was like, we want you to be able to have a house and a car and a job. Mm-hmm. He was like, you need to have all those three things to be successful. And he's like, you look at other bands that didn't make it, they have one of the three or two of the three or none of the three. Mm-hmm. And it's talking about, like, you're making the choice of, like, if you're going to be a career, like, musician,
right.
Like, you gotta... Mm-hmm. Like, put in the work.
Right, sure.
Mm-hmm. So, but these guys, all these bands put in the work, for sure.
Oh, yes, not that
and
they didn't.
No.
But they also broke, and then they had to deal with what happens with the fame.
Like, you go from playing, like, I mean, I've watched so many interviews about this period of time in Nirvana, because it's so, because it's like, what did you guys experience? Because that's the main thing. Mm-hmm. And Dave Grohl's, like, the two things, like, he... Like, immediately noticed, he was like, there was jocks at their shows. He was like...
Oh, yeah.
He was like, that didn't make any sense.
Wasn't just the kids on the margin, it was mainstream.
No, he was like, it wasn't like the shoegaze kids, like, looking at the ground. He was like, there were, like, legit jocks at our shows. And he was like, and the venues, like, he was like, we went from a 500-person club to a 600-person club to a 1,500-person club. And he was like, the size of the venue kept changing.
Yeah.
He was like, so...
You're filling bigger and bigger rooms.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he was like, at festivals, we were getting the top spot, not the midday afternoon spot.
Right,
and he was like, it's shit like that. He was like, and you notice, and then all of a sudden, he's like, but you're not famous.
Mm-hmm.
You're becoming famous, but you're also on tour. And this is 1991. You don't have a cell phone.
Right.
You don't have a fucking... You probably don't have cable TV.
You're not seeing blog news about your gossip column shit or whatever.
Well, that's the only thing.
It would be newspaper.
That's the only thing you're seeing is like the local fanzine. Like, what did they say about this?
Right, right.
But other than that, you're not... What other publicity are you getting?
Right.
And then all of a sudden... Oh, we're changing to a 1,500 person venue tonight? Like, why?
Yeah, well, like, and then being like, wait, we were on national television?
Yeah. So, I mean, and Dave Grohl is famous to said he's like, he went through that twice.
Yeah. he got rediscovered.
Like, he's like, with Nirvana and then with Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
He was like, the second time I was not going to fucking, like, take it for granted.
I think Dave Grohl plays a really important part in modern music history.
Oh, for sure.
Chronologizing and, like, because he does a lot of, like, discussion work, right? Like,
oh, for sure. Yeah.
He's almost like a little bit of a historian.
Someone
who
he's a
lived
living,
through it.
Yeah,
yeah,
he's a living legend.
And
quite literally.
And is willing to share those stories, you know? And is now much more sober. So.
Yes. So, not surprisingly, Cobain resented his characterization of being the Generation X spokesman. And
if you are a disaffected Gen Xer, you don't want to be the spokesperson for Gen X.
No. So, he believed his artistic message had been misinterpreted by the public. Quote, when you're in the public eye, you have no choice but to be raped over and over and over again.
Okay.
They'll take every ounce of blood out of you until you're exhausted. I'm looking forward to the future. It will only be another year, and then everyone will forget about us. Unquote.
Okay, so, that was provocative, Kurt, and unnecessary. But, so it sounded like he was kind of waiting for them to be a little bit of a flash in the pan.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So, in other words, fame really sucks, which was also a very new sentiment, given that the image of the rock star since rock and roll's inception, really, in the 1950s, was...
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Right.
Let's have a good time.
Live fast, die young, and leave a good-looking corpse. And, like, he really wanted nothing to do with that.
Or
it's like if you're in the wrong business, you know.
Or as Vivian Spinal Tap said, have a good time all the time. Before he spontaneously combusted.
But seriously, like, he's, like, the first... like anti-rockstar, yeah, you know, like an anti-hero, mm-hmm. you know, hero with villainous qualities. He's a rock star with, I don't want anything to do with this.
I don't think he's qualities. The first, but of the, he's like the standard bearer of this genre. So
huge as they got.
No, I mean, there's a long history of artists who wanted expression over fame. Yeah,
now that I think of it, you're right. But
they hit it big.
Yes.
The first person who came to mind was Dylan. Bob Dylan.
Sure. Okay.
You know, yeah, especially in the early days. He got hugely popular, but he had like this vision of what he was trying to say. Yeah. So, but especially... Like,
now y'all are ruining it. You're ruining it.
Yeah, the world. Anyway.
I am confused about what we're doing here.
And especially now, because of what fame entails and how it, in order not to be a flash in the pan, it requires deliberate effort. We're not as used to people who are unintentionally famous, right?
Right, yeah.
This is kind of like an artifact a little bit.
Well, I mean, we are in the sense of you can go viral with just about anything.
But
these
again,
days,
then you're going to be a flash in the pan.
Right.
People aren't going to remember you.
This is, they're a band.
Mm-hmm.
They're touring and playing their music, but they're not thinking like, oh, we're going to play stadiums and shit.
Right.
Like, that's just for them.
Did they ever do that sort of stuff? Play stadiums?
Probably not really.
Yeah.
They might have at like some festivals and stuff.
Yeah.
But no, they would.
They
play...
didn't like embark on a stadium tour.
No, they were an arena band, but you know, they didn't tour for very long. And
yeah,
they
that
didn't
that's
stay,
true. It all happened so fast.
Not very many people saw Nirvana when they were, you know, in this time. Mm-hmm. So basically, in other words, what he was trying to say was that fame really sucks, and he was also really reluctant to be a rock star. So, Cobain also struggled to reconcile the massive success of Nirvana with his underground roots and vision. Mm-hmm. He also felt persecuted by the media and began to harbor resentment against people who he claimed to be fans of the band, yet refused to acknowledge or misinterpret the band's social and political views.
Mm-hmm. Because Cobain also did poetry, right? I mean, I know he wrote lyrics, but didn't he write poetry too?
I don't remember. I don't think so.
I don't think
he wasn't around long enough.
Montage of Heck, didn't they show like he had lots of drawings, but weren't there like?
But yeah, he never released anything.
No. I don't mean that. I mean just like
I see
did
what you
he
mean.
Like
oh,
for
yes,
his
did.
Own pleasure? Like,
yeah.
So that's the kind of person I think is like a true. Capital A artist, because the thing is, there are like musicians, there are writers, there are painters or illustrators or whatever, but people who kind of like put out their artistic vision in all of these media, you know, they're not like Kurt Cobain. I don't think Kurt Cobain was a musician. I think Kurt Cobain was an artist.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because his brain was going in these multiple areas, and he could have maybe become a famous poet if he had sort of like channeled that, or if the opportunity had presented itself, or he may have turned out to be like a visual artist if some of that had panned out.
And also a lot of it, like a lot of people have said, and I agree with art. I mean, famous art is, you know, it comes down to timing. Like,
sure.
Which seems like it's taking, like it's only considering Destiny. I don't mean that, but it's like,
right.
If Nevermind is released in 1989,
mm-hmm.
2 years earlier, does it have the same impact?
Sure.
You know,
no, I guess I'm speaking more about my interpretation.
Oh, no,
of Kurt as a person, you know, is that there are just people whose lives, whose like interests and visions, and then sometimes their actual vocation is about like this expression. And that's what Kurt Cobain makes me think of, is that he was like I said, that capital A artist, which in my view and definition is like a person who just needs to express themselves.
Sure.
And they do that in the arts.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying that other technical or scientific endeavors are not forms of self-expression. They sure can be. But, you know, there are just people kind of built like that. And unfortunately, a lot of times they're well, I shouldn't say a lot of times. There are plenty of artists who are very grounded, very healthy, whatever. But I do think that for a lot of people who are maybe neurodivergent or other things, they have a bend towards creativity and artistry, but then they also have a lot of pain and difficulty in their neurodivergence or just their differentness from the whole of society, which often ends up in things like drug consumption and mental illness and things like that, which I think we might be headed towards.
Yeah, he was a vocal opponent of sexism, racism, sexual assault, and homophobia, and he was publicly proud that Nirvana had played it at a gay rights benefit concert. Think of that in the early 90s.
This is still way AIDS before time, yes. Yeah.
That was held to oppose an Oregon ballot, which would have directed Oregon schools to teach that homosexuality was, quote, abnormal, wrong, unnatural, and perverse in the school. My, how that's come back around.
Yeah, and I've taken some stances on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to take another one. If you think that it is okay, anything going on with, there's plenty of homophobia still in the world, but especially right now, transphobia seems to be the hot topic. If you think there is anything wrong or perverted or whatever you think about trans people, you can fuck right off.
Yeah.
And stop listening, and we don't care.
You need to realize that they are not what ill society, not the furthest thing.
So. They're not even an ill.
No.
They're not definitionally.
Right.
Trans people are not an ill on society, period.
Yes.
They are simply people in society.
Yes.
And we can let people be themselves, period, end of discussion. And nobody's fucking making children do shit. Like, come
on. Well, except for churches.
Ah, well, there we go.
So anyway, on to his health, drug use, and the album In Utero. So throughout most of his life, Cobain had chronic bronchitis and intense physical pain due to an undiagnosed chronic stomach condition, and was also diagnosed with depression.
Do we know what his stomach condition was?
Not really, but we're going to get back into
physicality. But he was in chronic pain. He was disabled. He had chronic pain.
One of Cobain's cousins brought attention to the family history of suicide, mental illness,
Ooh.
And alcoholism, knowing that two uncles had died by suicide with guns.
Oh, no.
So Cobain was also a heavy drug user, having first experimented with marijuana when he was just 13.
Yeah.
He also had a notable period of LSD use in his late teens and early 20s, which so did I. And he first used heroin at the age of 19. I've never fucking done that. Never even come close to that shit. So he first used heroin at 19, and this is going to be the thing that does him in.
Heroin.
And used it sporadically at first, as he claimed that for whatever reason it helped his stomach pains. But
you know, because it's an opioid.
Yes.
Is why.
Yeah.
And that shit's given as medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And even when it's given properly as medicine can cause problems for people.
Yeah.
But one thing it does really damn well, helps pain.
Yeah.
So if you're fucking desperate.
Yeah, you're going to take it.
Which... I cannot even imagine, like...
If you have chronic stomach pain, that's just gotta be uncomfortable.
If you have any chronic pain, I gotta say, like, one of my biggest, like, fears, I guess. You know, there's, like, I fear a Carrington event, right?
Yes.
And I fear, like, these are just random things I fear. Aneurysms. Aneurysms are scary as shit. But also...
I've lost a friend to an aneurysm.
I know, it's terrifying. But also... chronic pain.
Sure.
Because the level to which we've all been temporarily ill or in pain, right? And the level to which a pain can just tear
never go apart. Yeah.
Mentally and wear down at your resolve.
Yeah. Because it is a mental thing too. It's not just physical.
Anyone in chronic pain, and there are unfortunately way too many people, should all be given whatever they need for the rest of their lives and never made to work, period.
But if you're Ben Shapiro, you should never retire. And literally work till the day you die. Because that's what
he's doing.
Yeah, that's what he plans on doing, man. Because he literally does what we do all the day for this little hobby, but he gets paid tens of millions of dollars to do it.
Yeah, well, maybe the day he dies will be... I'll leave that.
But I was just like, yeah, but he's just also a prick. Anyway.
Well, yeah, he's an asshole.
So by the time Nevermind was released in late 1991, Cobain's heroin addiction had become a full-blown one.
Well, and it doesn't take much.
No.
For opioids, so.
Some of that evidence can be seen in the HBO documentary Montage of Heck, which I'm not sure if it's still on there or not. I watched it that one time. It was really uncomfortable. I'm like, I kind of wish I didn't watch that. Because it's all like home footage of Cobain, and it's really like...
tortured a little bit.
No, like, it's like, just really personal stuff, and it's like,
oh, did you actually like, did you kind of feel like we shouldn't be seeing this
a little
like,
bit well he, well public? This is what I'm gonna point out, like, okay. So in the documentary he can be seen nodding off in an interview, and nodding off is that term of like what heroin addicts do.
Oh, gotcha. Because uh-huh. It's we'll like just, knocking you out a little bit,
right? Yeah. They'll just all of a sudden fall asleep, mm-hmm. and for who knows how long, mm-hmm. So he can be seen nodding off in an interview where he is holding his newborn child, Francis Bean.
Oh, no.
He was also reported to be repeatedly nodding off with a photo shoot with tour photographer Michael Levine. Mm-hmm. The day after their first performance on Saturday Night Live in January 1992, Cobain mm-hmm. had his first overdose and was resuscitated by his wife, Courtney Love, of the band Hole.
Wow. If you, by the way, just a side note, if you want to hear Courtney's backstory, You're Wrong About did an excellent episode on her.
Did we listen to that?
We did, in the car.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
We were driving through Virginia. That's all. Yes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, because she often has like a Yoko Ono type reputation, which I think they also did an episode on. That's not really deserved, you know. Not that Courtney did not and does not have her problems.
She definitely got her own problems.
But Kurt had problems, yeah. Independent of anybody else, yeah. You know. And correct me if I'm wrong, but like they wanted to be good parents, right? They like they as much as two addicts can.
I mean, I think so. Probably.
That was an unnecessarily derogatory way to say it. Two people suffering from substance use disorder.
I'm sure they probably did. So like by the time Nirvana is made or Nevermind is made, mm-hmm. like it's kind of like he's already kind of going a little too far.
Yeah.
So by the time Nirvana's third album In Utero, which was released almost 2 years to the day after Nevermind on September 21st, 1993. So Nevermind came out September 24th, right. 1991. This is September 21st, 1993. They had a B-side album that came out in between that.
But, okay.
He had suffered several more overdoses between this time. So their third studio...
Like a string of overdoses. Yeah,
which apparently happens to a lot of heroin addicts. And it's just like,
I mean, I guess. But,
So their third studio album debuted at number one and further cemented Nirvana's status as the biggest band in the world,
yeah.
much to the disappointment of Kurt.
Yeah. Like, at this point, he needs yes. the ride to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The opening lyrics of the album on the song, Serve the Servants, mm-hmm. are as follows. Quote, "Teenage angst has paid off well. Now I'm bored and old." Unquote.
At 27. Or 26. 26. Yeah.
The album, which was intended to be seen as a giant fuck you to the record industry with songs like the aforementioned Serve the Servants, and maybe my favorite song title ever, Radio Friendly Unit Shifter, revealed a much darker side to Cobain, whether it was intentional or not, as some of his close friends stated that that was just his dark sense of humor. There are plenty of songs
or depression. It's hard to...
Yeah, well, there are plenty of songs right? like Very Ape and Milk It that have hints to his eventual suicide people. Mm-hmm. So part of the chorus in the song Milk It is, quote, "Look on the bright side, suicide," unquote. Oh, wow. So, yeah. Wow. So I don't know how else you're supposed to interpret that.
Yeah.
I mean, the rest of the song isn't necessarily that bleak, but anyway.
Yeah.
So all in all, Cobain continued to perform, giving little to no awareness to the public that there were any problems with his mental and physical health.
Other than literally stating it in songs.
Right. But that would change drastically on the European leg of their tour promoting In Utero in early 1994. So
this is leading up to. Yes. These are his last months.
Yes. Wow. So... after a performance at Terminal 1 Music Hall in Munich, Germany, Cobain went to a physician and was diagnosed with bronchitis and severe laryngitis.
And for us,
for a singer, that's not good.
No.
So he would seek medical treatment in Rome the next day, where they were scheduled for their next show. And he was joined by his wife, Courtney Love. The next morning, Cobain was found unconscious by Love after having overdosed on a combination of champagne and Rohypnol.
Oh, isn't that...
It's like a... That's like one of those old school... Yeah, kind like...
Like
yeah,
Quaaludes and
something
Rohypnol.
Like that. Yeah, it's
no,
in the
isn't
same...
Isn't Rohypnol like a known date rape drug?
I know. I thought that was and something else.
Roofies?
Yes. Is that Rohypnol? I don't know.
We don't
I
know thought... our drugs well
we do not.
Apparently.
I've never been a pill person. But
that's good.
Yes,
and it's positive.
Just saying. But no, I thought Rohypnol was like what you said, like Quaaludes, like in that family, like it'll knock you out or some shit.
Well, and so that's the point of date rape drugs too.
Well, yeah, that is true.
That okay? So its name, its generic name is flunitrazepam. It's a benzo, so it's a benzodiazepine. Used to treat severe insomnia. Oh, so knock you out.
Yeah.
And assist with anesthesia.
There we go.
This is from scholarly journal Wikipedia.
Yes.
it's nicknamed roofies or floonies, widely known for use as a date rape drug. Okay.
Yeah.
So these are like the massively heavy tranquilizer. Yes. Yeah.
So after 5 days in the hospital, Cobain was released and returned to Seattle, and the rest of the European leg of Nirvana's tour was put on hold. Love later said that this was the incident, or that this incident was Cobain's first suicide attempt.
Okay, so they're not saying that he accidentally overdosed. They're saying he tried.
She's saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she was closest to him, presumably, so maybe had the best insight to his mental state.
So on March 18th, 1994, Love called 911 distraught and told dispatchers that Cobain was suicidal and had locked himself in a room with a gun. Police arrived and confiscated several guns and a bottle of pills from Cobain, who insisted that he was not suicidal and had locked himself in the room to hide from Love. Which is like...
Well, now Courtney had her own...
She did.
...drug problems at this point, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Love arranged an intervention regarding Cobain's drug use on March 25th, 1994, and Cobain reacted in anger.
Guess what today's date is?
Is it the 25th?
It's March 25th.
It is 25th.
2024. Yeah. So 30 years ago today, as we're recording.
So he's got 2 weeks left.
Ugh.
Cobain reacted with anger, insulting and heaping scorn on the participants. He locked himself in the upstairs bedroom.
He likes locking himself in the rooms.
However, by the end of the day, Cobain agreed to undergo a detox program, and he entered a residential facility in Los Angeles for a few days on March 30th, 1994. Apparently, it was one of those... like celebrity rehab places where
cushy.
People are just doing drugs anyway.
Yeah.
So, the following night, Cobain suddenly left the facility and flew back home to Seattle.
Right, because you're not committed or anything.
No.
You can
right,
get out whenever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
On the flight, he sat near fellow Seattle native Duff McKagan of Guns N' Roses.
Oh,
yes,
Guns N' Roses.
Bass player. So, despite Cobain's animosity towards Guns N' Roses, Cobain seemed happy to see McKagan. McKagan later said that he knew from his instincts that, quote, all of my instincts told me that something was wrong. He seemed happy and he seemed sad.
Hmm.
So most of Cobain's friends and family were unaware of his whereabouts, and he was reported missing on April 7th.
So this is like after, they know he flew back home?
They know he broke out of the,
rehab.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know he took a flight back home.
Okay, they don't know where he is.
No.
Period. They're just like, he's not at rehab, and we don't know where he went. Okay.
And because he hadn't gotten back home yet,
mm-hmm.
like because all this is going on in a period of about a week.
Right.
So they checked his home before he got back.
Mm-hmm.
So on April 7th, 1994, amid rumors of Nirvana breaking up, the band pulled out of the 1994 Lollapalooza Festival, and that was like kind of a sign of, okay, well, maybe somebody's been in touch with...
With Kurt.
Yeah, like how would they like drop out of that?
In the press and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So, on April 8th, 1994, Cobain's body was discovered at his home by the aforementioned electrician Gary Smith, who had arrived to install a security system.
Yeah.
A suicide note was found addressed to Cobain's childhood imaginary friend, Boda, that stated that Cobain had not, quote, felt the excitement of listening to as well as creating music, along with really writing, for too many years now. Unquote.
Wow, and they too many years, and they've only been popular a few years. So he probably like probably, like, once they even got close to hitting it big, he probably started losing interest. Yeah,
like, nah, I'm out.
Like, this isn't what I wanted. This isn't how I wanted to express myself.
I just want to do, like, a lot of people have said, like, he just wanted to do heroin.
Well, once addiction was a problem, and play club shows.
So.
Yeah. Now, to clarify, his death was by a firearm, right?
Well, the coroner's report estimated that Cobain had been dead for 3 days before the discovery of his body.
He likely died on April 5th.
So his official death was April 5th, 1994, by self-inflicted gunshot wound.
Okay.
He was just 27 years old. So the aftermath and the legacy of all of this, which
is still today. Yeah.
So a public vigil was held on April 10th, 1994, just 2 days after the news broke, at a park at Seattle Center, drawing roughly 7,000 mourners. I mean, imagine that. Pre-recorded messages by Nirvana bassist Chris Novoselic, along with his wife Courtney Love, were played at the memorial. Love read portions of the suicide note to the crowd, crying and chastising Cobain, which I've seen videos of that.
Well, she's still in the throes of her own problems. Plus grief.
She showed up near the end of the vigil and started distributing some of Cobain's clothing to those who remained. So she
must have just been out of her mind, basically.
Grohl said that the news of Cobain's death was, quote, probably the worst thing that has happened to me in my entire life. Yeah. I remember the day after that I woke up and I was heartbroken that he was just gone. I felt like, okay, so I have to wake up today and have another day, and Kurt doesn't. Which is, it's like survivor's guilt. Like,
yeah. And
it's like the music industry, like, got another one.
Yeah.
Because there's a precursor to his death. Mm-hmm. In 1990, the lead singer for the band Mother Love Bone, but they were supposed to be the first Seattle band that broke. They're also a precursor to Pearl Jam.
Okay.
Pearl Jam's two guitarists and bass player came from that band.
Oh, okay.
But this guy, Andy Wood, died of a heroin overdose.
Oh, okay.
He didn't commit suicide.
Right.
Or complete suicide.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But he essentially killed himself.
Right.
And well, that was like the first casualty of that scene, which caused Pearl Jam and Soundgarden to create the band Temple of the Dog and release an album on their own. And imagine being that record exec that 2 years later discovers that, you know those two bands that just broke fucking huge? They made an album together.
Right. But, and correct me if because you're getting that Grohl quote, correct me if I'm wrong, but Dave Grohl also struggled with substance use for a while.
Yes, kind of after this. Yeah.
But then also, like, he is now
clean
and sober, right?
I don't necessarily know he's clean and sober, but he's not
suffering from substance use disorder. No. And he did directly address it, right? Like, he either went to rehab or cleaned up on his own or something, right?
Something like that, I believe.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, with him, I'm not sure if it ever got to that, but anyway.
Well, hey, there are varying degrees of substance use disorder, to be clear. There is, you know, having a couple bottles of wine at night, and there is shooting heroin. They're all substance use. It's just there are varying degrees of risk in different ways. Yeah.
So Grohl believed that he knew Cobain would die at an early age, saying that, quote, sometimes you can't save someone from themselves. And in some ways, you kind of prepare yourself emotionally for that to be a reality, unquote.
Wait, sorry, was that Grohl who said that?
Yes.
Okay, so. Well, I mean, judging from his childhood, like, poor guy had, Cobain, that is, had... Like, not a great start. He wasn't given a whole lot of opportunity to, like, grow a stable life.
No. And that's the worst for a kid, if you don't have stability.
Yeah.
I mean, really, that's the...
Yeah.
Or that's how some kids overcome... Who knows?
Stability and also, abandonment.
Yeah.
Like, that's really shitty.
So, Cobain's death became a topic of public fascination and debate.
Yeah, and the conspiracy.
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah. I was going to, I'm like, should I mention, like, a lot of people think he got murdered? I don't think he did, so it's not worth mentioning. If you think he got murdered, there's plenty of stuff you can go find on your own.
Yeah.
So, his artistic endeavors and struggles with addiction, illness, and depression, as well as the circumstances of his death had become a frequent topic of controversy.
Yeah.
According to a spokesperson for the Seattle Police Department, the department receives at least one weekly request to reopen the investigation resulting in the maintenance of the basic incident report on file.
So to this day?
So this day, the case
Guys,
is not officially
stop.
Like,
yeah, for
closed.
God's sake.
Yeah.
Let them close it. If only for Francis. Jesus.
So in March 2014, Seattle police developed four rolls of film that had been left in an evidence vault. According to the Seattle police, the 35mm film photographs show the scene of Cobain's dead body more clearly than the previous Polaroid images taken by the police.
Sorry to interrupt, but like I find it fascinating when they're like, oh, guess what we found? It's like, can you be a little more organized here?
Well, I mean, you just throw shit in like an evidence vault and like, you, like later
you
it's like, oh, we have all this film that we didn't develop. Who knows?
As someone whose job entails
incompetence, that's
tracking
why.
Things given to me, like,
well, yeah,
you don't do
but
that.
That's not what their job entails.
Yeah, it does. Tracking things
for,
that they have.
For some of them, that's...
Oh, my God.
I mean, they're good at getting rid of evidence. We know that.
Fair.
So the photos in question were later released one by one weeks before the 20th anniversary of Cobain's death. So 10 years ago, which is crazy because now we're on 30 years.
Yeah.
So one photo shows Cobain's arm still wearing the hospital bracelet from the drug rehab facility he had left just a few days prior to returning to Seattle. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of one of the... Because I'm sure there wasn't much left of, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. The other photo shows Cobain's foot resting next to a bag of shotgun shells, one of which was used in his death. Mm-hmm. On April 10th, 2014, Nirvana was inducted into the absolute joke known as the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, fair.
Grohl, Novoselic, and Love accepted the accolade at the ceremony where Cobain was also remembered. They played, Novoselic and Grohl played with Pat Benatar.
Oh, okay.
Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins referred to Cobain as the Michael Jordan of our generation and said that Cobain opened the door for everyone in the 90s rock alternative scene, which is undeniably true.
Yeah.
Like, basically, like, the ethos of 90s music is fucking anything goes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really.
Mm-hmm.
Think of how many different styles of music
mm-hmm.
became popular during that decade. And it was just like, as long as it sounded good.
Right.
And you were good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know. In 2005, a sign was put up in Aberdeen, Washington, Cobain's hometown, that read, "Welcome to Aberdeen. Come as you are." As a tribute to...
Come. As you are.
As a tribute to Cobain. In June 2020, the 1959 Martin D18E acoustic electric guitar used by Cobain for Nirvana's MTV Unplugged performance sold at auction for $6,010,000to Peter Friedman, the chairman of Rode Microphones. It was the most expensive guitar and the most expensive piece of band memorabilia ever sold.
Wow.
In May 2022, Cobain's Lake Placid Blue Fender Mustang guitar sold at auction for $4.5 million to Indianapolis Colts owner Jim Irsay, making it the second most valuable electric guitar ever sold and the most valuable one to this, or the second most valuable guitar ever sold and the most valuable electric guitar.
Yeah, because the other one was acoustic electric.
It's commonplace today, 30 years after Cobain's death, to see people, mostly teenagers, wearing Nirvana t-shirts, which is probably the greatest tribute there is.
The staying power. Yeah, absolutely.
And that was the story of the death of Kurt Cobain.
Or is it okay if I title this the 27 Club Kurt Cobain? Because that's how we've been titling this.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's I've been wanting to do this one for a while.
Yeah.
And then when episode 350 was coming up, I was like, I don't have time.
But also the fact that the anniversary is on a Monday.
But then I was
like,
wait, his 30th anniversary is coming up, so
we can
do it for
that. I guess it's the 30th anniversary of the discovery of his body. But
correct. 30th anniversary of the news.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, I certainly remember, like, when it, like, we were playing basketball at, like, the park down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my mom picking us up and just hearing it on the radio and being like, did they just say he was dead?
And you were like 4...
I was 17.
17.
Yeah.
Because
sadly, I am 47.
Yes, you
are. Minus 30.
That's true.
But,
yeah.
And then, like, getting home and then maybe, like, an hour later, MTV News, like, comes on.
Yeah, breaking MTV News.
Oh, yeah. And it was just like, wow, like, this is fun. Like, he's dead. This is real. And, I mean, it wasn't, I think later on he became this huge figure.
Yes.
At the time, he was the most popular. Like, it would have been like if Axl Rose died, kind of. But not necessarily. Because Nirvana really did. What they had started really did change everything culturally.
Uh-huh.
I mean, from clothing to music to video games. Yeah. It
was a cultural movement.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And really, like, the Gen X coming into their own in the arts, kind of, and media, popular media. Then it turned, like, the early 90s started to have some, like, Gen X expression. Like, Kelly was talking about going to see Reality Bites. It was, like, 94.
That was 94,
So, which was also 30 years ago. And it's not a cultural movement I personally identify with.
No, because you were, what, you were 9?
Yes.
Or 10.
I was 9. Well,
mostly 9. That's true. Yeah.
But, I'm solidly millennial, but I do understand, like, he really was, like, a figurehead of a generation.
Yeah.
Especially for music, specifically.
Yeah. I mean, they were promoted that way, and some people were, and, I mean, again, the Gen X attitude is like, no, he's not, man.
Well.
He's too big.
I know, because all you Gen Xers are too fucking cool for school, but, whatever.
But it was basically true at the time. You just can't. You didn't realize it because you're living in the moment, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's certainly become true over time.
Yes.
It's like you look back and it's like, yeah, duh.
Right.
Like, the ripple effect of this happening, like we said, just the tentacles, like, literally, like, went everywhere.
And it's not something you can know or tell, except for it's not something 3 decades later.
It's
literally
not something you plan. Mm-hmm. It just fucking happens.
And then you have to, you can't tell the impact until years later, so.
No. That's correct. You can't fully, like, you need to, it needs to be fleshed out over time, right. You know, and then you look back at it and you're like, wow, like, that was really different. Like, nothing like that has really happened since.
And I do think we're in an interesting moment culturally where we are especially examining the 90s and their impact.
People want to go back so bad.
No, I don't think so.
I'm talking in the sense of, like, before everything got crazy in the 2000s.
Yeah, but I think people are looking at the 90s a little more critically, too, and how it led to where we are now.
That is very true.
I mean, we're going back to the 80s to see some of that, right? Like, Reagan, specifically, in the Reagan era, sure, like, kind of kicked it off.
It
happened in the 90s.
It has been a slow burn.
Yeah. To the ground.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But the biggest question I have is, where is Chad?
I did not do a follow-up on that.
Oh, man.
But he sounds like one of the guys that used to be in a band that became a lawyer, right?
Chad Channing and Associates.
Chad Channing Esquire.
Sorry, I just wanted to lighten the mood slightly.
Yeah.
Sure. Because it's a really sad story, frankly. It's a really sad story.
Yeah, I mean, it made me think about a lot of things that I hadn't thought about. Like, I mean, what... because when you're 17, you don't know what the fuck your life is going to be like.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure I wasn't thinking, like, oh, 30 years from now, I'll remember this day. Like,
right.
I don't even know if I'm going to be around 30 years from now at that time. You know, shit like that.
Well, when at that time you think that 47 is, like,
ancient. Is ancient, yeah. Like I'll be in a walker by the time I'm... Yeah, you don't realize how young it is.
But youth, it's wasted on the young.
Yeah, you don't. No shit, right? Because you don't realize how young you are when you're 17.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't worry, kids. It gets worse.
It does. It's way worse. Way fucking worse. But yeah, and I just, like, I remember being, it was like me and my friend Jimmy and James. I had a friend, Jimmy and James. Yes, that's why.
Jimmy James Subs.
Yes. That's why they each had their own name.
Yeah, they needed differentiation.
But yeah, it made me remember that and being like just the kind of shock, like, because I think what a lot of people forget, unless you were, well, even if you were around that time, like, he was missing for like a week. And it was just like, everybody's like, he's probably in some fucking, like, he's a rock star millionaire.
Yeah.
He's probably in some den somewhere and fucking whatever.
That's wild, because I feel like today people would be, like, flipping out. People flipped out when they knew where Kate Middleton was.
That's true.
Kate Middleton told everybody where she was going to be and asked for privacy, and everybody freaked the fuck out.
The whole plot, it's actually a pretty good movie. It's a Guy Ritchie film, like one of his last good ones called Rock and Rolla. And that's what the whole subplot is there's this rock star that's missing. Nobody knows where he is. Mm-hmm. And it gets weaved into the plot here and there, but right. It starts out as like, what does this have to do with the movie at all? And, like, it reveals itself later on. Kurt did not have that fortunate part that this guy did in the movie, because he was still alive. But it's, it made me think about, and that's, like, people look back on that, and at the moment, people were saying, well, grunge is over. But but nobody really wanted to accept it. It kind of had a slow burn as well for the rest of the decade, maybe until.
But it fully gave birth to the alternative rock.
It did, and also like a couple years later down the line, new metal came in was the new, but now looking back, it's like that really was the death of the grunge movement. Like it was over right then.
The trend of grunge.
Yes.
But it was the over spirit right of grunge continued in alternative.
It came back in Banana Republic stores with. Get your favorite 90s grunge wear.
Does it... Banana Republic?
Or it wasn't... But no, it was...
Banana Republic does not do that.
American Eagle, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
When they had those as, like, the baggy jeans. And I'm just like, oh my fucking God.
People still wear flannel.
Yeah.
Flannel's never really gone away.
Not really, no.
So there's that.
Yeah.
Thanks for the flannel.
Thanks for the flannel, guys. And the long johns. But yeah, I mean, it's... I mean, it is sad looking back on it and knowing a little bit more about, because I kind of knew his upbringing wasn't great, but I didn't realize it was kind of that fucked up either.
Yeah, that's no good.
So, and there's a lot of stuff I left out because I didn't want it to be like,
yeah, a downer.
All about his childhood. It's like, let's hit on these. Like, people will understand. Like, if you explain these key moments, like, wasn't the best.
Drugs are a hell of a drug too.
Yeah, they can be.
And his chronic pain, that's a really sad part of it, because self-medicating is sometimes the only feeling of relief or control that some people have. And that's an absolute tragedy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I need to figure out a new version of this saying, but, you know, there, but for the grace of God, go I sort of idea, you know, that like... You luck out or are privileged enough to not have to deal with some of that shit. And so it's really sad when people don't luck out and do have to deal with it. But Francis is okay, right?
Yeah,
Francis Bean's okay?
Sure.
I don't know much about her. I guess I can't say much. And Courtney cleaned up, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean...
Okay, you don't know?
I honestly don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, she seems... more stable.
Frances Bean
now.
Seems okay. Courtney Love, I'm not sure if she'll ever be okay. Who knows,
but
though?
She doesn't seem to be strung out all the time.
I don't know.
I hope.
I hope not.
I hope Courtney's okay.
I don't know how you could last that long. Like, we're talking like 30 years at this point as well.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Well, I hope both Courtney and Frances are okay then.
Yeah.
And doing all right.
Yeah.
Because it's a shitty trip. And regardless of her any version of involvement or enablement or intertwining toxic relationship with Kurt, I was going somewhere with that. Basically, you know, she deserves to move past that. And also the shit she witnessed, and like seeing him overdose multiple times, and also a potential previous suicide attempts, that's traumatic as fuck.
Sure.
And so I hope she's gotten help for that. That's all.
Yeah.
Because that's really shitty.
Yes.
And Frances also looks so much like both of them.
Yes, she does.
She really, really does.
There's definitely elements of each parent in her, just in her face.
Yeah.
So.
She has the most unreal eye color, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like absolutely fluorescent. She's very pretty. Conventionally pretty. Now I'm just talking about how conventionally pretty Frances Bean is.
I'm thinking there's only five people that are still hanging in there.
Well, we'll see. Give us a wave. I know I've done that a few times.
If you're one of the five that made it.
If you hung in.
A minute.
An hour.
40 in.
An hour 40.
A minute 40. Yes, right. An hour and 40 minutes.
We're going to trim a couple bits when we took a break and all that. So it'll be a little bit anyway. All right. Well, R.I.P. Kurt. along, I mean, with just, this is like our fourth or fifth installment of maybe the 27th
It's at least our
club,
fourth.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And it's just, 27 is too young, especially, well, any mode of death, frankly, but yeah, don't try suicide. No. That's just, and don't try heroin. Please don't try heroin.
Yeah.
It's bad news. Bad, bad news. So now it's just a PSA. Don't try heroin.
Don't do drugs, kids. So.
And just remember to say hi to Chad Channing if you see him. Anyway, that was the 27 Club, Kurt Cobain. And this has been another episode of All Bad Things. I'm Rachel.
I'm David.
We'll see you next week.